They want me to get rid of my dog. Can they do that?
I'm being fined for leaving my garage door open too long.
What are covenants? Do I have any rights?
Help, I feel like I've left the American zone.
If you want the answers to those questions, join me, Sue Bartholomew, and my guests on The Commons every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on WEBR Fairfax Radio. We'll ask the experts and we'll untangle the truth about what's left of our property rights. On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. This is On the Commons, and I am Sue Bartholomew. Joining me on the show on the Commons today is Bill Davis, an old friend. Bill is amazing because every time I call him and say, hey, Bill, you come on and talk to me, he says, sure. And we always spend a lot of time laughing and giggling and having fun. And so join us today as we have fun as well. Bill is on the road. And so, Bill, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Sue, for your kind words. I'm in the big city of Austin today.
You're in the big city of Austin, and you're having fun, right?
Well, I'm doing work, and we often refer to this area as the People's Republic of Austin, but that's a whole other story. Okay.
So what's going on in the HOA world? I know that you're busy, and when you switched your practice over to representing homeowners, things kind of went a little wild for you, didn't they?
Oh, yeah. And just to clarify, I've mostly extended my practice from an intellectual property practice to doing more real estate and other things, but I've pretty much always represented homeowners. I just can't, you know, the HOA side is just not something I can do, and it's unless the end result might be to protect or benefit some homeowners. But I just don't generally see any protection of homeowners from a typical HOA case. So, in fact, the homeowners are the target, right? They're the prey in all these cases most of the time.
They are. They're always the target. And you end up with some of the most interesting cases, and I know you've talked about some of them on the air, and I don't know if you're going to talk to us about any of them today. But one of the things we were going to sort of chat about a little bit today was CAI's white paper. What do you think of that?
I didn't think much of it. Although, you know, one thing that's interesting is their sudden concern for millennials, and they're trying to figure out how to bring millennials into the fold. And it reminded me of some of your prior shows that you had with Dr. Solomon, where he talked about what was going to happen when the children of the people that have been abused in these places are the ones who are in control. And I think maybe, perhaps, the industry is already sensing an uprising and a resistance to just, you know, falling in line, becoming an involuntary member of an HOA and just paying your money and not asking questions. And they do seem to be concerned about it, and I saw some of that in their paper. You know, they claim that they didn't trust institutions. Well, what is the trust about an HOA? I mean, my gosh, you know, it offers you nothing of value. It has no obligations to you in most places and in most states, and you're supposed to just pay money, whatever they ask for. And it's always more and more money. So I thought the paper was kind of interesting, and that people should read a little bit more into it than just the surface on this thing.
One of the things, I mean, they start right off by wanting to make changes to the governing documents. They don't like the fact that the governing documents are so restrictive. But, Bill, when you enter into a contract, one side cannot just arbitrarily make changes. What happens to the contractual side of this? I mean, they don't want to deal with all of the nonsense that goes to amending the documents. They just want to be able to go to court or have the state enact legislation saying, hey, you know, if it's a little too difficult and a little too cumbersome, why don't you just go ahead and ignore it? What happened to the contract?
Well, it is kind of amazing, isn't it? And it's always proponents that want more restrictions, which usually comes from the management company and the HOA attorneys as opposed to the actual homeowners, who want to make it easier to amend these restrictions. So they don't want any restrictions on imposing more restrictions, but they only want to make it hard to make it easier. I've seen industries, sponsored legislation come in where they want 100% of the homeowners to have to vote to get rid of an HOA, but only like 60% to form an HOA or 50 plus percent. It's like, wait a minute. So you can form one with a fraction of the people. In order to kill it, it requires all of them. That doesn't make any much sense. And why should it be that just because your neighbors want to form this organization and impose liens on their property to pay for it, since when did this private organization have the authority to, just because some other people wanted it, to impose a lien on your property? Imagine you paid off your car and your neighbors decided they wanted you to keep making payments on it, or that they wanted to go into debt for something and wanted your car to be security for it. Why should that be okay if you said no? I mean, that's the problem I have with many of these things. The idea that just because this herd of a majority, or the majority of those allowed to vote, that's even worse, right? Yeah. A lot of these places, you're only allowed to vote if you're in good standing as deemed by the board. Why should this...
Or the manager.
Right. Why should this amoral herd be able to decide that all these restrictions can be imposed on your property? You didn't get to vote on it. And that's not what you purchased. And to hold these documents out and say, here's the restrictions, and to support the proposition that more can be taken away from you, more land use, more enjoyment, and heck, the ability to transfer your property by saying, oh, yeah, we can impose all these transfer fees. That's not what you bought. And it's just a deceptive marketing scheme. It's a deceptive real estate sales scheme. It's just wrong. A government certainly couldn't do that to you. And when a private organization does it, it's usually conversion or civil theft or something along these lines. You know, an HOA shouldn't have this ability either. It is a private corporation. It should not have governmental powers. And just because some people voted and said this is okay doesn't mean make it okay. There's no end of the people that want to impose control over everyone else. You'd asked about recent cases. I do have another one. I'll depart briefly from the CAI paper.
Okay.
But a fellow approached me. He's having problems with this place. He's came in from Florida, and he and his wife are building this house. And he wanted to have a – this is a rural area, okay? So people have like 5 to 10 acres in this place. And he wanted to have a workshop on his property, like many other people do. They have a house, and they'll have a secondary structure that's not a little bitty structure. It'll be a sizable structure, say 1,200 square feet or something like that. But it'll be a barn, a workshop, or an RV storage shed or something along these lines. The board members decided among themselves to adopt a restriction that prevents people from being able to have a building with a metal roof. They want the roof of the outbuilding to be the same as the roof of the house. Well, the houses are frequently stone or something like that, and they have an asphalt roof. But these outbuildings are typically, they're not houses, they're utilitarian buildings, and so they'll be metal buildings, and with the metal building, you have a metal roof. And trying to put an asphalt roof requires a lot more support and a bunch of other things. It just doesn't even make any sense. And plus, in this area of the country, it's a real fire hazard. You don't really want an asphalt roof in a lot of these places. So, especially in a shop. I mean, that doesn't make any sense. I was checking with him, the client, recently, and started doing a little research, and it's just like this other case I got. This isn't the HOA. The HOA went under in 2001.
Another one.
And these same guys decided to form another organization, not tell anybody about it, and pretend to be the HOA. And this has been their personal club where they rule like their own private sovereign, state over all the homeowners over there. And of course, oh, no, you're not in good standing. You don't get to vote. No, you have to come to us for approval. There's some disease with these people. There needs to be some kind of prosecutorial claim you can bring against them for this kind of fraud. We are going to go after them, but we're not going to let them know that we're onto them just yet. And that's the fun part. But it's really fraud on a significant scale. If you think about it, these guys are deceiving title companies. They're deceiving insurance companies, including the mortgage insurance, people who do the mortgage insurance, because they're seeking like a resale certificate or an estoppel certificate from the entity that has this lien. Well, they're not that entity. They have no ability to execute a release. They have no ability to make the representations to how much is owed. It's a fraud. Okay? So this this is an interstate problem. This is really more of a federal crime, and it should be prosecuted as such. Of course, we can't do that. We're going to go after them civilly. But it's a disease, and these people think nothing about the criminal activity they're engaging in order to fulfill some ego or inner desire to be able to control everybody around them. And I hope to make a number of these cases more public and elevate them so that the people start questioning the people who claim to have authority over them. And they should. I'm not some hippie out of the 60s, wearing a t-shirt that says question authority. I don't see these things as valid entities to begin with. They're private entities that don't own property, that are trying to exert enormous control over your home, what you do in your property, what you do in your property, who can visit you, what cars you can drive, all sorts of things. I don't see this as a legitimate form of governance, which is what, of course, CEO's white paper is all about, is private governance. They just want to have all the resistance to private governance removed and to find ways to convince, at least in this paper, that millennials are a problem for them. They don't want to have volunteers on boards. They want, these management company professionals, which, of course, are the worst, who have no interest in right. you or your home, but really more about how much money they can take
yeah.
from you.
Yeah. But I want you to step back and take a bit broader view of what's going on with all of this. And thank God the millennials are just kicking back. They're sort of a group unto themselves, and I like that. I really, really like that. I was really concerned. For years I've been concerned that if they grew up in HOAs watching what's going on, they're going to think that this is normal.
Right.
And they're
you haven't
going to
known anything different.
Yeah, exactly. But it seems that I didn't give them enough credit. They're looking at this and going, are you kidding? I don't think I want anything to do with that. So that's, in my opinion, a good thing. But when you look at what's happening across the country, Bill, and
yeah.
you look at the dumbing down of America, I mean, our schools are failing. I mean, everything is failing. It just amazes me how dumbed down we are. And
yeah.
I think that this HOA, is this HOA concept either responsible for it or taking advantage of it? I'm not sure, but somehow they're tied, I think. Are they taking advantage of the fact that people are dumbed down, or are people dumbed down because they've been held under the thumb of an HOA?
Maybe both.
Maybe both, which came first, the chicken or the egg type of question here? Because obviously correlation.
They're inundated with this false marketing propaganda about how these things are beneficial, how they help you, how they protect property values, and who prepares the educational materials, because it's just like in my field, attorneys, the state bar, I hate to say it, this will probably get used against me someday, but it's become more of a tool primarily for the vendors to use as a way to sell their services. So we're required to take these continuing education classes, and we just get inundated from educational class vendors, and of course the state bar takes a cut on it. So really, do I really need all this stuff? Well, realtors have to do the same thing. They have to have realtors or real estate professionals in every state have to pretty much take some kind of continuing education class. And guess who teaches their class of HOA? Those materials are put together by, at least the ones I've seen, CAI or various, foundations of CAI. It's mostly false from what I can see, but the realtor, it's like you stayed enough time, you tell a lie enough times, they simply repeat the same stuff. They don't question it.
Yeah, they don't.
And, they go tell people, and people don't think about it until it starts happening to them. But, I mean, these questions are never answered. Really, how does an HOA protect property values? It doesn't. There's no empirical evidence. Years after years, all they can come up with is, one study in Columbia, Maryland, which, bizarre.
No.
Out of the whole United States.
They can't even rely on that. But I've told
right.
you this before. I mean, if you go and buy stocks and bonds, the company you buy your stocks and bonds from has got to send you information on what they're doing and how your money's doing. You gave us so much,
right.
and this is what we did with it. We either lost it or we tripled it for you. But
right.
if in the old days, and originally, if you look at some of the old documents, the old declarations, it says the purpose of this HOA is to protect property values. A friend of mine in Reston, Virginia, sent them a letter and said, I own stocks and I own bonds and I get these prospectuses from them. I get these reports from them on a quarterly basis or whatever it is, telling me how what my investment is doing. Now,
right.
since the purpose of this association is to protect property values, could you please tell me what you have done to protect my property values? Could you also please tell me how my property values are doing compared to similar properties in the Reston area? When they got that letter, it went to the CAI attorney, affiliated attorney, who went, they didn't know what to do. They had to respond by law, so they sent a letter and said that we're looking into it. So, they completed their obligation. They replied to his letter. Never heard from him, never heard from them, never went beyond that. But what's interesting is that since it is the CAI members who actually write the declarations,
yeah.
that language disappeared from that point on.
It's actually still in ours. It says enhance and preserve. Really? How'd that happen with all the lawsuits that are going on?
When was yours built? When it could have been before
2001. But, well, it went into probably 98, 99.
98, 90. That's about the time this happened. that's about the time this happened. So, actually, a little before that. So, yeah, it was in the 90s that my friend sent them the email or sent them the letter. It was before emails. So I sent them the letter and said, "Okay, how are we doing? What have you done to protect my property values?"
This is all a
But that's
kind
what
of
the
fraud.
Purpose of the association was. It is the purpose, the sole purpose. It's not to harass you and to fleece you. It's to protect your property values, right?
Supposedly. And that's not the reason that people buy houses.
No.
That's just not the fundamental reason people buy them. They buy it for shelter first, to raise a family, use some enjoyment. They don't buy it to preserve property values. There's other things they could do if they want to, and what are they doing? They're actually borrowing money to do this to begin with. The lender's going to be protected. They have a security interest in the property and mortgage insurance. But at any rate, back on this paper, did you also notice that they want to empower boards to act as police? And they give this example about how when a board complains, the police say it's a private matter, take it up, or somehow take it up with the board. But isn't that completely contrary to what usually happens? It's frequently the board that's out of control and the homeowner's told, sorry, it's a private matter. It's a civil matter, you need to go to court. Well, these guys want private signing and private police powers, but they're a private corporation. Why? They're not a special person above the law for any other person in the subdivision. The corporation is another resident of the subdivision, if you want to look at it that way. So why can't a homeowner unilaterally fine a corporation? I mean, it's just absurd that they should have this one way, we're going to fine. And frankly, it's a contractual agreement. There shouldn't be any finding whatsoever.
I agree with you. That's got to go. It's absolutely
It really
to.
Has to go. We're working to challenge that. We are challenging it. And I've got a number of cases now where it's going to be very costly to the HOAs because they thought they created a finding power for themselves. They didn't. They were, what's the word, enamored with their new power. They went out and filed liens against people's property. Or I should say notice of lien, because that's a squirrely way to try to get around of getting hit with unauthorized practice of law. But they make this claim, which is a call on title, for thousands of dollars of fines. And, you know, you don't have that power. Finding power is inherently designed to harm people financially. Okay, that's what you mean by harm. You want to harm them. And those are the elements that all we need to show. There's a statutory cause of action in Texas that allows you to get 10 grand for each one of these documents, for each person in harm, if you can show they intended to harm. They intended to harm. That's why they did this. And it's going to be very costly for them. You know, they thought they were going to hit somebody up for $35 or $500, and it's like, well, that's going to cost you 10 grand for every one of those you filed. And by the way, we're going to have the management company, because they're collecting a late fee. You did this in order to entangle assessments with other things, so the management company could get a late fee every month. We're going after the management company, too, because they intended to profit from this scheme. So now, all of a sudden, it's 10 grand for each person harmed, which is going to be like mom and dad, you know, who own the house, and for each defendant that engaged in this, which is going to be the management company and the HOA. So now it's 40 grand for each document. And it doesn't take too many of these to start altering how some of these entities behave and whether they can get insurance coverage and things of that nature. And I can assure you it's very prevalent in this state.
But doesn't that go back to the, you know, we're treating you like children and you're misbehaving, and if you don't do as we tell you, we're going to take away your toys or your ability to buy your toys, and we're just going to punish you. You know, doesn't this go back to the dumbing down? I mean, come on, Bill.
It does.
It's just absolutely outrageous. It is absolutely outrageous. Why don't people see this?
I don't know. I think some of them believe that they hold their head low, they won't get caught up in it, you know, it'll just happen to somebody else. And I don't think that's an appropriate way to live. I'll share this. My wife wanted me. It's very hard to find non-HOA property. It is just so prevalent.
Yeah. And
despite what you hear for these industry hacks. And my wife was like, well, we hold our heads low and we can go in there. I'm like, no, because we weren't holding our heads high, you know, with all the other problems.
Yeah.
It was just somebody decided, I'm going to pick on people who probably aren't going to resist. And heck, those are the people that are probably more likely to get picked on. And it's been very hard finding non-HOA housing. We've been looking. And some of the realtors come back and they'll tell us there's no HOA. It's like, well, it says right here there's an HOA. You know, the MLS papers don't mention it. And some realtors actually say, well, if it had one, it would mention it. No, they usually conceal it, and the realtors are only interested in how many bedrooms, how many bathrooms, how many stories, and what's the street address and the price. They don't get into is there an HOA or not. But
the way they used to do that over here is that if there's an HOA, they have what the HOA dues are on the listing, and if there's no HOA dues listed, the assumption is that there is no HOA.
And that's a dangerous assumption, because they might put zero, not fill it out, or something like that. Here, you may look for, they might list something as common amenities. They might, they may not. They may mention, you know, that you have to get approval prior to building. Well, that doesn't necessarily tell you if there's an HOA or not, but you have to look for these clues. And I'd say about 50% of the time or more, when they say there's no HOA, they're absolutely wrong. It's very frustrating as a buyer to try to find non-HOA property, and I believe there's a big demand for it. I know there's a big demand for it. But primarily, anybody that's ever lived in an HOA around here is looking for non-HOA property. That's why it's so hard to find.
I know that it's really difficult to find, and at least in Fairfax County where I live, county does not want non-HOA housing, because then they have to pick up your trash or do something for you in return for all the tax dollars that they take. So they make your life, they do, they make it very, very difficult for you to survive, and they will go after you in different ways. Financial, it's always a financial fight.
Oh, yeah.
It's always a fight. You can't afford not, you know, you can't afford to stay there. You have to be careful. I got a call one day from someone who said, Shu, I finally found a house that's not got an HOA, and we're about to move in. We're going to the settlement when we're given our resale packet, and there's an HOA. And I said to the realtor, what's this? oh, don't worry about it. It's defunct. It hasn't done anything. I said, he says, what should I do? I said, you've got 72 hours in Virginia to cancel the sale, get your earnest money deposit back. I said, if you really don't want it. He says, yeah, but it's defunct. It's not doing anything. I said, yeah, but it's there, and it could come back. A year later, he called me. He said, should have listened to you. It came back. They want money. Do I have to pay? Yep, you have to pay. Sorry. I don't know what to say. Yeah, you have to pay.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking at... A realtor got back to me, and one of them said, oh, it's only $35 a year. And, well, that's nice for one that's $1,200 a year, but it's not necessarily the dollar amount per year. It's this fining threat, the threat that they can interfere with your purchase or sale of your home, that you should need to go get approval from this anonymous committee. You don't even necessarily know who they are. You don't necessarily elect them or anything like that. They're not government officials. They really don't have anything other than the ego to dictate whether you should be able to do something or not. It's still an HOA. It has perpetual liens on your property that can never be paid off. And that by itself, it is the control aspect, is a real problem. Of course, the proponents go, yeah, well, if you want to go live in your, you know, junky neighborhood, look, There's no immediate desire to go take my Honda Odyssey and prop it up on blocks in the yard, you know, like these guys would have you think. And in fact, the nicest neighborhoods around here, there is no HOA. They're very desirable places to live because there's no HOA.
It's fear, Bill. You know, it's fear. They always try to control you with fear.
Well, that's what they're selling, too. Oh, you know, what would happen next door if you don't do this? Well, it can happen right outside your subdivision, and it can still happen right next door because the HOA has no obligation to do anything. At least it doesn't in this state. So you have to pay it money, but it doesn't necessarily have to take care of the pool, the roads, or to prevent, you know, nuisances or anything like that. I wanted to read something from you. To me, this ties into part of the CAI white paper where they're talking about strengthening alliances with developers and their ability to, sort of change restrictions on the fly. This is a letter that someone else on your show years ago received from one of our favorite massive organizations run by a now former Texas State Senator. But listen to this. The board of directors, along with assistance from committee members, the association manager, has made considerable effort to review the neighborhood community as a whole and compile the enclosed rules and regulations. Then they put in parentheses fining policy. And keep in mind, this place there was no such thing as fines. This is all coming from the management company. For all homeowners to abide by, the CCNRs are written for a community before the community is built. Therefore, many covenants are too vague. It is within the board of directors' fiduciary duty, according to the governing documents, to redefine these covenants and to impose fines for violators who will not cure the violations of the neighborhood. This is the kind of crap that comes from these so-called professional management companies.
Yeah.
And it's all geared at generating fees for them, and it makes the place a miserable place to live. Huh?
Yeah. No, I know. They're going to redefine it?
Yeah, that's what they actually said in here. It's within the board of directors, you know, not the homeowners or the court or anybody else. But it's within the board of directors' fiduciary duty. This is junk words. This is nonsense. This is terms being, so I forget what the word is for that, when you just drop these phrase dropping, name dropping, whatever. It is within the board of directors' fiduciary duty, according to the governing documents, to redefine these covenants and to impose fines for violators who will not cure the violations of the neighborhood. Now, fiduciary duties are by board of directors to the corporation, not to homeowners. And a corporation doesn't have any obligation to do anything. And 99% of the time, there's zero obligation. They're empowered to do things, and they're entitled to receive money, but they don't actually have an obligation to do anything. So the claim that this is some fiduciary duty deal is absolute nonsense. And that sounds to me more like this management company went to work trying to scare board members to come up with a scheme to benefit the management company. And I've seen the same finding policy over and over and over again in various parts of the state. And the only thing in common is the management company. And even the homeowner isn't, it's not the subdivision. It's the management company. So, or the parent company. But, yeah.
It's like the attorney who said in court to the judge that the declaration was a living document and you didn't have to follow it verbatim. And I thought the judge was going to come flying over the bench at her. She was absolutely livid. She said, "You, wow." I thought that was funny. I mean, you know, sometimes you sit in court and you just have to laugh if you're not involved and you're just sitting there. But I thought that was so funny. Oh, it's a living document, Your Honor. We don't have to abide by it verbatim. Oh, really?
that's the language used to describe a constitution. That's the problem. These things are not governments, and it's time to stop treating them as if they're entitled to some kind of sovereign power. They're not governments. The vendors want governmental power, and they want to be the agents who essentially usurp that power to mess with homeowners on. But they're not government, and a real contract, there's obligations on both sides, not just one. And this needs to be addressed. And I'm glad that they actually fear a class of people coming up that aren't buying into this. The problem for those people is, unless you're going to live in an apartment, and again, the industry's fearful of this too, that they won't buy HOA property. Yeah. Well, people that have experienced it, especially the bad side, aren't going to, and there's an ever increasing number of those people. But what does it matter? It's not like the current owner can do anything. They're stuck until they can find the next greatest fool to buy the property and replace them as a member, right? And so the industry hasn't lost anything there. Homeowner dies off. Well, the state's now it belongs to the state. The state's on the hook for assessments. There you go.
I want to go back to, they're not government. Some legislators and Senator Mike Garschneider from Nevada has said this. We called them, we actually put into the language that HOAs were quasi-governments, and he said that simple statement made them more responsive, and they were held to higher standards, so that it's not just this, you know. But he decided that the quasi-government language in the law actually protected homeowners in HOAs. But I want to, you're talking about housing, and if you don't buy an HOA, you're kind of stuck. One thing I've noticed, which I'm just absolutely horrified by it, but there seems to be this trend now towards tiny houses. And they call it tiny houses. Bill, they look like garden sheds. But the joy about... No, they're 100, 200 massive, 300 square feet. But the good thing about them is that they're not attached to the ground. They look like garden sheds. They literally look like garden sheds. But you can pick it up and move it, and you put it in somebody's orchard or somebody's backyard or somebody's someplace, and you don't have to be in an HOA. That's the plus of that. But if American housing is going to end up being something akin to a garden shed, I mean, what does that say about the alleged greatest nation in the world? If the residents live in garden sheds, I mean, third world countries, people live in better housing.
Right. I was in a social forum, which I don't like participating in too often, but I was in a social forum online. If somebody was trying to market their, Agenda 21 type housing as sustainable.
Ah, yes.
And it's kind of funny because the question, it was just a cheap marketing buzzword. It was really false advertising because all they said is that you use less energy. Okay, well, are you taking care of your waste products on site? Are you generating your own food? This is the whole thing is creating people in smaller places for sustainability, and they never actually address both sides of the equation. And another commenter pointed out that he lived in Japan for a while. They lived in what they called, I think he called it a pencil tower. He was definitely afraid of buying anything because there was no place to put it in his unit. He had 350 square feet. And, I'm sorry, he had less square feet than that. It was $350,000 for his space. And he talked about how miserable people were, how you heard the noise from everything going on around you.
Yeah.
And he gave statistics on the number of people that live there that committed suicide. It's a miserable place to live, and people are not actually looking for that. And if they really were, then, you know, you wouldn't have a problem with the turnover and everything else in these spaces. I'm sure they can find a buyer for a while, and then, you know, until that person can find somebody else to offload it onto. But he just talked about how miserable living in such a space was. And there's even been some psychological studies about depression from clutter. And it's not so much that it's clutter, it's that it's the space is closed in around you. You don't have any...
You don't have the space to do anything.
You don't have space. You don't think. You don't. You just sort of sit there.
Yeah. No, it's pretty miserable. And in the CAI white pages, I mean, they're looking down the road, and this is so wonderful in 2020 and 2030 and 2040, and, you know, a third of all housing and the majority of all housing is going to be part of an HOA. You know, if people woke up, and if we stopped dumbing Americans down, and if people decided that they wanted to really take a good look at what was happening and stop believing everything they are told, I think that if, you know, I've always said this, Bill, there's more of us than there are of them.
Oh, yeah. Long shot.
And if we stopped being afraid, and if we stopped believing the nonsense, because it is nonsense, if we decided that we just weren't going to take it anymore, we could overturn this.
Yes, I mean, that's why they're trying to win structurally, right? That's why they're trying to get these laws passed to give the HOA supreme power over everybody, or to give them private finding powers, but a homeowner's forced to have to go to court to do anything, you know, making it very expensive for a homeowner challenge and things like that. There definitely needs to be, especially to deal with things like these white papers, a more professional group of homeowners engaged at a state level and a national level to challenge these things. I like what that lady in California has done. Murray, I think her name is. She's, you know,
Marjorie.
A professional group.
Marjorie.
They keep up on state laws. They put them out there. They deal with all the phony propaganda put out by CAI, and it's, you know, affiliated management company lobbying groups in the state. And there may be something like that in Florida, but for the most part, because the industry guys are getting paid for this, of course, they're the ones with the more organized groups. But I do think organized homeowner group could do well. And, you know, CAI is definitely afraid of more local control. They want things done only at the state or national level, and they want to deprive the local government from being able to have any type of control over, you know, HOA-type housing. And the reason is because their resources have to be concentrated. The numbers thing you were just talking about, how we fall outnumber them, yes, but we're on more equal ground at a capital as opposed to, you know, they have to fight many fronts that they have to deal with local governments. And that's what they're trying to get laws passed that say, and this is why it's one of their public policies, is they want this only to be able to be challenged at a, you know, state level or national level as opposed to a local government. There have been a number of, what do you want to call them, sort of, I don't know if riot is the right word, but near-riotous type uprisings in some of the local governments around here. I know Rockwell a few years ago dealt with this, challenging this mess going on with HOAs throughout the state. So I know that people on the ground level are very upset with them and still are, and we should do everything we can to divide and conquer and not let this be just at a state level, but to have representation at the state level and have a voice at state level.
I think, you know, what's good is that when I first got involved and when I learned how to turn on my computer back in, I don't know when, and got on online, this was before there was the internet. I, you know, it was really the early days. There were four homeowners who were active. Fred Pilot, I can't remember. Joni Greenwalt, the late Joni Greenwalt, a guy by the name of Bob Janowskis, and there was another lady. And they called themselves the Fearsome Foursome. When I came on board and joined them, we were known as the Fearsome Fivesome. And over the years, I have met and talked to a number of really, really silly homeowners. I mean, they were just worried about the most ridiculous things. And they were not, you know, they were dumbed down, basically. But what's really interesting now is that you have more people, more homeowners who are educated, who are savvy, who are intelligent, who are able to look at some of the stuff that's coming down and write rebuttals. I've had a number of them on the show. There are more of them out there. You have people like Debbie Goonan. You have people like Sarah Benson, who's written a book, Don DeBatt, her co-author. There's another lady in Massachusetts that I'm working with, and she is really very, very gung-ho, and I think that the neat thing is that we do have people who have the ability and the creds to do something. So I think we're finally getting to the point where the homeowners will be able to do something as opposed to just complain about it.
I hope so, and I think I agree with you on the growing number of not just people who are upset, but people who are upset and have the skills and the mindset to work to do something about it.
Yeah.
Because that's also important, because too many people just pay it, move on. I wanted to, back on this paper.
Yes.
On the CAI paper, they talk, you know, it's interesting what they're trying to preserve. They have this section in there that says all stakeholders need to recognize the need for associations to conduct reserve studies and fund reserves based on those studies. Well, of course, sudden demands for money create financial hardship, which is one of the critical things for CAI members to get money, right? Because by creating financial hardships, all of a sudden you have payment plans and the management company can get money, or you threaten foreclosure and that has a whole bunch of more costs, and now the HOA attorney and the management company get money. But that just seems to be a recurring pattern in these things. If you get past the first paragraph about reserve funds, it's not about reserve funds at all. It's the whole section is on that they had, let's see here, two sentences on reserve studies, and that's the heading. But the entire remaining 9 paragraphs are all about foreclosure and making it easier for these things to foreclose. And it's kind of interesting. They say before 2008, foreclosure was an effective remedy because individuals had equity in their homes. The association, therefore, was awarded enough money. Wait a minute. I thought the HOA preserved value.
Yeah.
You know, this is the ridiculous part of their claim, that because they don't have value, they now need to all have non-judicial foreclosure power. Because that's what this part of the article is about. They don't like the fact that, you know, judicial foreclosure can be time-consuming. And, in fact, they said there's a special part here on Texas. Let's see here. An increasing number of states, i.e. Texas, are requiring full or expedited judicial foreclosures, similar to the process lenders are required to follow. Yeah, lenders actually gave you money, you know, not as opposed to the HOA.
Yeah.
Given all its processing costs, judicial foreclosure moderates the ease of non-judicial foreclosures for associations. In other words, they don't like doing this because they would much rather be able to threaten you with non-judicial foreclosure, which means no court involved, which means these guys can make all sorts of claims as the amount of money that's owed. They don't have to prove their case. They threaten with foreclosure in order to extort money from you. That process was so problematic in Texas. That's one of the reasons the law was changed, is to curb the really unscrupulous behavior of these management companies and the HOA attorneys, who all seem to have a common membership in this organization called CAI, because they were the ones who were up there lobbying to try and say, no, we don't want, we want to be able to continue non-judicial foreclosure. Now HOAs, not condominiums, HOAs can either pursue judicial foreclosure, or if the governing documents used to permit non-judicial foreclosure, now it's a hybrid where they have to get authorization from the court before they can exercise the power of sale. But they do have to prove their case, and there's a route for homeowners who want to challenge the decision, so as opposed to what was happening before. So CAI doesn't like that. No. It moderates the ease of non-judicial foreclosures. And I thought there were so few of these happening, it wasn't a big deal. Wasn't that the other marketing pitch they gave? There's just so few of these things.
Yeah.
Their own paper undermines the claims that they've been making for, you know, decades.
They've always done that. The first thing that they came up with, the first survey that they came up with, was actually a fairly decent survey. It was a tag-on survey. It was done by Gallup, I think, and they announced it. They got the press building downtown, National Press Center downtown, and they handed out the survey, which is something that has never been done since then. And they talk about, you know, how many people in the survey they went through, and they talked to people and asked them if they voted in elections, if they did this, that, and the other. And I had Bob Diamond in the studio with me the day after that came out, and Evan McKenzie on the phone. And Bob Diamond said, oh, yeah, the survey just came out, and blah, 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 blah. It's so wonderful, and everybody loves this, and everybody. I said, yeah, I said, CAI has been sending out these alarms that people are not voting, and if we don't have proper elections in HOAs, we're going to undermine the whole thing, the whole system's going to collapse, you've got to do this. And I'm looking at the survey, and it says everyone who responded to the survey said they always voted 100% in all elections in the association. So I brought that up. Bob Diamond had not seen the survey. He jumped across the board and grabbed that out of my hand. And then he says, oh, it's just a tag-along survey. It's just a cheap survey. It doesn't mean anything. I'm going, right. Since then, every survey that has been done has been, there's a summary, but the actual survey is not available. Or if it is available, it's not available for months after the summary written by CAI is online. So, you know, if I don't believe these surveys, and, you know, anyway, they're just a mess.
They are a mess. Here's another point they want. Some states are providing other enforcement options. In Illinois, for example, associations are allowed to evict delinquent resident owners. They still own their homes, but they can't live in it.
Yeah.
The association then has the power to collect the rent generated by the home to offset the delinquent assessments. I seem to recall a case like that out of Illinois, but I wasn't sure if it was an HOA or a condo type of a deal. But that's pretty disturbing that an entity that has no ownership interest in your home, at best it has a security interest in the home, at best, and that security interest is junior to that of a lender, and you've already assigned rent in your mortgage deal to the mortgage company. So why does the HOA think it's entitled to come in and get this stuff? Well, when I say assign, they take a security interest in it. But the bottom line is that's really scary. They start doing that civil war, and you know, it may be that they're able to prey upon a very small percentage of people. People, and then everybody else will think, well, it won't happen to me. But there's no addressing in here anywhere about where is this assessment money going? What's it being used for? And how does it support the homeowner? And I have to say that what's scary about the Illinois statute, you know, Texas has, you can have evictions and things like that, like somebody doesn't pay their rent. They're not renting the property from the HOA. They own the property. Second of all, even a tenant has a right to withhold rent if the landlord is not, you know, taking care of certain things. Well, what they're saying is that the HOA has absolutely no obligation whatsoever to the homeowner. The homeowner is treated as a tenant or even worse than a tenant, and they have an obligation to pay no matter what the HOA is doing or not doing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not a good, and this is what the industry is promoting.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the paper. This is the white paper. This is what they want to seek state legislative action for. That's a little frightening.
And this is the biggest purchase of your life. This is the asset that they claim they're protecting. They're protecting.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, Bill, there was that shooting in Illinois, the guy who came home and found all his stuff.
Oh, yeah.
That was a condo. He came home and all his stuff had been removed out of his unit and put on the ground with a crime scene tape around it. And he went and shot the secretary and her girlfriend. There was another story that never made the papers, but on one of the CAI sponsored lists in the early days when I first heard about this, one guy said that his manager, the board president, someone had friends coming in from out of town. So he used this law to evict this guy from his unit, rented the unit out, or let his friends stay in the unit while they were there before he was allowed to get back in.
Yep. And there was a case in, I think it was in Kentucky a few years ago. I'd have to remember the state exactly, but some architectural committee refused to allow a guy to do something, and he went and shot several of them. I think he killed 3 or 4 people.
Yeah.
And I think the newspapers are kind of glossing over, there was really an HOA behind a lot of these things, and they're simply calling it a homeowner dispute.
Yeah.
You know, as if it was two neighbors. It's like, no, it's a lot more serious than that, and I don't think people realize how much chaos, unhappiness, job problems, and everything else these things are causing to the economy as a whole and to familial life.
I think that's something that needs to be addressed and needs to be studied.
Right.
You know, and yeah, that's absolutely. Absolutely something that needs to be done. Well, Bill, we've got about a minute and a half left. So what would you like your last words to be? What do you want us to... Yeah, I know. I do that to you, don't I?
What are we going to do this year legislatively? In Texas, we won't have another session until 2017. And I think we're working to put together an approach at the Capitol to... we got rid of some of the fish that were directly swimming in the pond. They're still paying their lobbying organizations to lobby the Capitol, but at least they don't have, one of the big players up there writing the legislation himself and claiming, it was from constituents. We're going to get some significant judgments against some of these things. We're going to get it publicized, so that people know that not only can they win against them, but they can be rewarded when you go after boards that do these bad things. I want to encourage more of that. I want to encourage more people resisting these things, resisting, these groups that try to use an HOA and the anonymity and the insurance that an HOA offers them in order to control everybody else, and find out that there can be financial liability for engaging in this practice, and you can lose things like your property, your house, things of this nature when you do stuff like this to people.
Well, you know that you're always welcome to come and talk about that. I know that you're working on some cases, and I also know that you're an extremely creative attorney, so I'm always happy that you've got some of these cases.
Thank you, Sheila. I'm going to send you the judgments when we get them. We've got some coming up shortly. We're just going to wait for the judge to make a decision, and I'll hand it to you to give you a laugh.
Send it to me, and then plan on coming on, and we will talk about them. Let's put it on the skyline. Let's let people know that, yes, in fact, you can win.
Yes, and be rewarded for doing it, and be compensated for doing it, for taking the risk.
And I guess
that's part of the myth, right, that you can't win against this overbearing, all-powerful, omnipotent association. Yes, you can.
Yeah, but that's, you're going to be relying on Texas law to do that, right?
Well, I am for these cases.
Okay, all right.
I think the principles are applicable in other states as well.
Okay, cool. Well, thank you so much, Bill. I know you've had a busy day. Thank you for taking time out to be with me.
Thanks, Sue.
And I'll talk to you soon.
Okay.
Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to justice for HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.